This is Running Life and Stuff, the podcast, proving that life is for squeezing. Here's your host, Craig Allen.
Hi, well, that's me. I'm Craig. This is Running Life and Stuff. Hi, Anna. How are you?
I'm all right, thanks, Craig.
Brilliant. That's great. And do you know what? This episode's going to be amazing. I know from the last episode you said you were just going to do a bit of walking, a bit of swimming. How's that gone?
Yeah, do you know what? It's been absolutely lovely. I feel like my workload recently has been pretty busy. Life's been quite full on. And I feel like I'm going with the mantra that moving and not doing like super structured, heavy sessions all the time is okay. I think sometimes I can get a bit obsessed with the routine of going to classes or doing a heavy weight session or something like that. But I think sometimes, you know, when it's so hectic and your brain just feels fuzzy sometimes, I think just being able to get out in nature, as cliched as that sounds, going for a walk, seeing your mates and having a chat for a coffee or whatnot, or just going for a swim, it just does the trick. It just awesome. Like gets you back into like a bit of a calmer zone, and it makes me feel appreciative of what I have and a bit of gratitude. I think that's okay.
Yeah, it's okay. I need to be in a calmer zone at the moment.
What's going down? What's going on?
Just
talk to us.
Just lots of things. Training. Obviously, I was racing, getting ready for the next event, hectic life.
What have you been up to this week?
I've been preparing my interview for Lois. That's what I've been
up to. Is that what you've been doing?
It is, absolutely. And getting the body recovered. Getting ready to the race.
And it feels to me like there's more to this, but
yeah, I'm sure there is. And I've been trying to find trainers with great grip on. And thank you for some of the recommendations that have been coming in. But still keep the recommendations coming in, because I'm still looking for the ideal shoe.
Do you know what I always thought was really weird? Was it like a couple of years ago now, probably like a decade ago or whatnot? I think, was it Nike who bought out those trainers that looked like little trotters, like little goat's hooves?
I can't remember that.
And they're kind of like separated into two bits on your feet, and they're basically like little goat's hooves. And I feel like if you want a grippy trainer, go and ask a goat.
Go and ask a goat, right, that's it. Next time
I say, do you know what I'm really freaky about goats? And this is why I just don't trust them at all, very much like I don't really trust squirrels, is that they have rectangular irises.
Right.
Yeah, they have rectangular irises, and I think that is creepy.
So next time I see a goat, I need to look at their eyes.
Don't get too close.
I won't get too close, but I need to check out what trainers they're wearing.
Yes.
Well, we talked in the previous episode about having an expert on the podcast to talk about testing and the benefits of testing and different types of testing that could benefit our training. And I'm absolutely delighted to welcome Lois from Loughborough University Performance Sport Lab onto the podcast today to talk all about testing.
Hi.
Welcome.
Hi, thank you for having me.
I feel like immediately, because Lois is from Loughborough Uni, that this podcast has been elevated to a level I thought we'd never get to.
Well, we're at that level already. And we're going to come to that in a moment, because
thanks for being here.
Yeah, thank you for having me. I'm excited.
Listen, it's great to have you. And you know what? I know Anna is itching to get into this, because as we all know, is that Anna started off on this running journey. So we're going to talk about the benefits of testing, the types of testing, and the greatness that's going to get you to the half marathon that you agreed to do. Is that right?
For full disclosure, and I have just had a conversation with Lois off mic, I'm not really into running. Probably never will be. So just so it's full clarity for you. But you may continue, Craig. Go ahead.
Thank you. So you work across a range of performance sports through Loughborough Uni as a performance lab. For elite athletes within the performance centre. So just talk to us about the types of testing, the benefits of testing. Let's just start there. So yeah. What are the benefits of testing?
So we have a range of sort of physiological services that we can provide at Loughborough. So that might like revolve around the types of training you're doing and the type of event you're like training for. So the type of test you did was a submax lactate threshold test and a VO2 max test. So yeah. These are the kind of tests we'd use for endurance athletes who are training for event, who are looking to sort of specialise, then tailor their training towards specific events. So basically it's getting an in-depth view of their overall physiology. Our submax test would look at your oxygen uptake and carbon dioxide output across a range of intensities, whether that's running, cycling, rowing. And then we have a separate test, which is our max test. So we look at your VO2 max, which is the maximum amount of oxygen that you can sort of take in and use. And it's going to give us an idea of your like ceiling of your performance and your real top end. So with those tests, we get a scope of your whole physiology and see how it all fits together.
Fantastic. So as a performance physiologist, Lois, what test is best going to suit Anna first? So Anna's arrived at Loughborough Performance Lab today.
I'm being railroaded into something I didn't agree to.
No, definitely not. We're just talking about the benefits of testing. And obviously, as we know, you've just started out on exercise, running. But you did say earlier you like cycling, so you can benefit from that as well.
Yeah, I do like biking, and you were saying as well that you sort of work with a range of athletes and people that are just generally into sports. So it's not just elite athletes and those that are at top of their game. Like, you do work with Olympians, which blows my mind. But people who are just, for example, wanting to do 5K or working up to a half marathon, I don't know, say I did want to sort of work towards a 10K or something like that. Is that something you'd be able to help me with in terms of training going forward?
Absolutely. So we have a range of people coming into our commercial service for testing. So people have just started out on their running, cycling, triathlon journey, through to people who have been training for years and just want to get some data on what they're doing. But for someone who's maybe just starting out, it's quite a good place to get a benchmark of where you're at, especially if you were then training for a race or an event. We can track how your training is affecting your physiology. We can get a benchmark before and after, and you have some real numbers to track your progress and tailor your training properly.
Great. So I turn up. So Anna's turned up today, really nervous. What test would best suit Anna first to get them going? What could they expect when they arrive? What's going to happen? What do they need to prepare? What do they need to do when they arrive? What happens and what test is best?
So if Anna's going to train for a half marathon, she's going to be running, I would suggest that we do our usual running physiology assessment. So that is a submax test to identify two lactate thresholds. And when I say lactate, it's going to involve little blood measurements from your ear. So we do a little finger prick sort of thing over your earlobe and we'll take blood from there. Only a tiny capillary tube, so it's really not much.
Yeah.
We'll also look at your heart rate response and your oxygen uptake running at a range of different speeds. So that would be the first test we do. And those intensities or those speeds will be very much dependent on you as an individual. So we're not going to run you at really fast paces. We're going to run you at the right paces that are going to capture what we need from your physiology. And that'll be on a treadmill in our lab. It's quite a big treadmill. It can fit bikes and wheelchairs on it. So it's quite impressive to look at and can be a bit daunting, but you're safe. You can grab the bars. Craig will let you know.
You're safe. Yeah. And you have a harness.
You have a harness.
Put on you.
I don't like the narrative that this is taking, that I'm going to stack it.
It's fine.
I'm able to walk in a straight line.
It's not a problem. You'll have a harness on. It's a big treadmill. You'll be perfectly safe. So don't worry.
I'm not worried. I'm not doing it.
We're all about, we've got to relax everybody, so you'll be fine. It's okay.
So that test is, like I say, it's submaximal. So it's not going to be pushing you to max. It'll probably, if anyone's a runner, it'll take you up to sort of your second threshold or just beyond it. So the last couple of stages might be a little bit hard. Craig can probably let you know how it feels better than I can. But that one's not pushing you to max per se. Then we have the second test, which is our VO2 max test. So that one, it's a lot shorter test and the protocol is very different. So we're not going to increase the speed. It's going to stay the same, but the gradient of the treadmill is actually going to increase.
Oh.
So every minute, the gradient's going to go up by 1%. So you're essentially running up a hill that just gets steeper and steeper and you just keep going till you reach max.
Wow.
It's awesome. I love running up mountains. Yeah. So I just love it. It's
so
great.
Where did Craig get to in terms of percentage?
Oh, I think you ran for about 8.5 minutes. So we're looking at sort of 8 to 9% on the treadmill, which may not sound like much, but when you're running up it, it feels quite hard.
It is quite hard. My legs were giving up.
And what about the pace? So do you change the pace to suit the athlete?
Absolutely. So we do the max test after Craig's submax test. So we have an idea of the range of paces he's already used to running at. So we tend to pick a pace that's sort of either 2 kilometres an hour back from the last stage or 2 stages, depending on where we've put it. So it's sort of going to be like a in the middle kind of pace that's going to be fast enough that we're going to reach max, but also not too fast that you actually can't push yourself. It's nothing too crazy.
It's nothing too crazy. You'll be fine, honestly.
I mean, the way you've explained it, I totally understand why how the two sort of would work together and how you'd get data from that.
Yeah. And the data is the key. So for me, I first started testing in 2019. So I, you know, my running coach said, right, we need to start getting some, you know, data statistics to move us forward, because as an ultra runner, you're training a different way. Mm. You need to understand the metabolic rates, what are your thresholds, what your heart rate's doing, so then you can, you know, feed yourself in the right way, plan your right nutrition. But also, it's essential for me when I'm racing, I know what my optimum heart rate is and I know where I should be. Mm. And likewise, when I'm training, I use the data and the science to go, right, well, that training block I've just done was below the right threshold, or it was too high, too low, etc. So it really helps put the science behind it. So like for yourself, that's just starting out, you'll turn up there, you'll get the science, so you know when you're training for your first 10k or your first half marathon, it will give you a foundation of what to do. You know, even if you've got a coach or no coach, it's in simplistic format of literally how you're supposed to go about your training. You get a full detailed report from Loughborough, and it breaks everything down into bite-sized chunks. So literally, for the person that doesn't understand it, there's a narrative in there where you can actually break it down and interpret it yourself. So it would benefit massively.
In terms of when you're talking about metabolic rates, mm-hmm. are you talking about like an optimal zone that you're running in there? What does that actually mean?
So when we tested Craig on his submax test, we did something that's called a fuel utilization test. So what we're looking at there is his metabolism. So it's the same sort of test that we would do for any other runner, but we have slightly longer stages, and it gives us time for Craig's sort of fat and carbohydrate utilization to sort of stabilize. So when you talk about metabolic rate, we're then getting a picture of, okay, how much fat is Craig using and how much carbohydrate is Craig using for running at these certain speeds. So that's the kind of picture we can build up with those kind of tests. And then off the back of that can inform Craig's nutrition strategies and sort of recovery and improving his performance around sort of really specific details around his performance. So,
gosh, that's so fascinating. So if I'm taking it really down to base level, so Craig, you're a runner, and yeah. obviously this is your world, so you understand what all this means. If I'm walking into a gym and I go onto a treadmill and it has the sort of, you can select like fat burning zones mm-hmm. and stuff like that, is that a very sort of generalised, I guess, blueprint of what you're looking at?
I don't really use treadmills. I don't know specifically what they show, but I would imagine that if it's saying fat burning, it's going to focus something more aerobic, but it's going to be a very sort of generalised approach. Mm. Whereas what we can give you is a breakdown of your actual training zones. So based on your individual response to running at certain speeds, this is where you should be for each type of training that you should be doing.
That is brilliant.
So there's a lot of talk going around about everyone needing to do zone 2 training or other types of like HIIT training. So we can break down like what it actually is zone 2 for you. Is that where it needs to be? What type of intervals might suit you better, and actually what heart rate and what pace you should be at for those kind of intervals. So then if you were to go do a session on the treadmill, you could specifically know what you should be looking for in terms of pace, heart rate, like your perceived exertion, so how hard it's feeling. So you don't have to rely on guesswork or like someone set random sessions for you or whatever set on the treadmill. You can actually do it yourself.
So, wow. So it gives you that independence.
Exactly.
Back.
Yeah, it gives you that independence. So for the benefit of everybody, you know, these people talk about LT1, LT2, fat burn. Just explain to everybody what LT1, LT2 mm-hmm. means and what these kind of acronyms mean, because obviously myself that runs, you know, it's a massive benefit. I understand it fully now, and I can see the benefit from 2019 to 2024 of where I've come and where I need to focus on. But for the, you know, for the runner or the cyclist that's just starting out, what would they expect from an LT1 and LT2, just to explain the basics of what that actually means?
Yeah, so I mentioned earlier in the submax test we test blood lactate, so that is a measure of how much carbohydrate your body's breaking down. So we have lactate produced in our blood. We're just sitting here, so we might have a resting level of blood lactate. But as you exercise and you start to increase the contribution of your anaerobic energy system, which relies on carbohydrate, we get an increase in blood lactate. So when you first start exercising, we'll see a sort of pick up above baseline from your resting blood lactate levels. And that is where we pick our LT1 or lactate threshold 1. As you continue to exercise, if we were to increase the pace you're running at or the power that you're cycling at, we'd start to see a bigger increase in lactate, and it starts to sort of shoot exponentially up. If you imagine a curve, it's sort of flat and then it rises up towards the end. Where it shoots off the scale, we pick a second threshold called LT2 or lactate threshold 2. So those kind of split up the training zones I was talking about earlier. So below LT1, you're pretty much working aerobically. So Craig will spend a lot of time working below or at that threshold for the kind of work that he's doing in ultra running. LT2 is quite a good marker for 10K pace. So Anna, if you were to train for a 10K, LT2 is where you'd want to spend a lot of your time. But equally, if Craig was to start climbing up a mountain, he might reach LT2 and even
quick.
Higher than that. So yeah, that gives a bit of context of how it sort of fits in. But
and is that because your body is pulling in the carbohydrates for energy?
Yeah.
To keep you going?
We rely mainly on oxygen as a fuel. We can only really use that at really low intensities. So the more we start exercising, the harder we go, the quicker our body needs energy, so it starts to rely on more anaerobic stores and using carbohydrates. So you're always going to see a pickup in blood lactate at higher intensities, but it just varies depending on your training status and your training background as to where that is, which is why it's so individual and why we test individually.
It is interesting. So for me, since 2019, my body's become more efficient at burning fuel. So it burns.
And is that because you know where you're able to burn fuel more efficiently through testing?
Yeah, through testing and also through the type of training I've been doing. So for example, from my tests I've recently done, I've seen a drop in my VO2 max, which we'll talk about in a moment. And that's because I'm not doing a lot of high intensity exercise. I'm doing more training in LT1 to make my body more efficient so I can go for longer. If I decided to run a 10K, I always say to people, it takes me 2 or 3 minutes to warm up. Once my engine's going, it's going. But once I've finished my 10K, my engine's fired. I'm like, right, let's go. And that's why I struggle with shorter distances, because, you know, my body's trained to be more efficient at a lower level and go for a lot longer. Whereas what I need to do with my training just slightly is adapt it better to increase my VO2, because my VO2 has decreased slightly year on year. But that's because last year I was training for a big race. I was doing a lot of time on feet, as I call it. So I was out for 4 or 5 hours just at a low heart rate, but just burning fuel more efficiently so I could go for a lot longer, which is it's fascinating. So like, if I want to now train harder for a 10K, I would have to stop doing my long stuff and start doing more VO2 max work where my heart rate's pumping harder for a shorter period of time just to increase my VO2 max.
So you can adapt your training to move between those different levels dependent on what exertion you're doing and in over the amount of time.
Yeah. Exactly.
Yeah.
That is so incredible.
For the benefit of everybody, so VO2 max, just to explain from a physiology point of view, what is the VO2 max, what that means. And so when somebody gets the report, they've got the VO2 max in front of them, what should they expect to see?
VO2 max essentially means the maximum amount of oxygen that your body can take in, use and transport. And then that's going to directly relate to your capacity to do endurance exercise. So different running events or any endurance events are going to have a different sort of reliance on your VO2 max as a key determinant for that performance. So for someone who's like a 5K runner or a middle distance runner, VO2 max is going to be really important. They spend a lot of time working at that intensity, and they like to have a high ceiling essentially for their physiology. It's really important because they're always pretty much running there. For Craig, who spends a lot of his time running a lot slower, a lot longer, typically VO2 max isn't a key determinant. But what we can see when we look at the two submax and max tests together is actually where do some of the submaximal thresholds sit in relation to his max. So for Craig, when he talks about his VO2 max dipping slightly, now we're at a point where VO2 max is a key determinant for him because it's actually sort of limiting his progression. So there's the maximum amount that we can sort of use when in terms of our VO2 max. And actually for Craig, we're getting to the point where we kind of need to move it on a little bit. So it means different things for different events and different individuals, but it is definitely a key like predictor of endurance performance overall.
Yeah. So I know now, so my coach is taking that report and he's building my training block into more faster tempo work and doing faster runs at the end of my long sessions. So for example, before the race I was out in Spain with, you know, 2 or 3 weeks before after the testing, it was like, right, we're going to do a 2-hour run, but at the end we're going to do a 10-minute tempo. And I'm like, that's just cruel. But I know it's the benefit. And I need to see the benefit of it. So it helps so much. And it's amazing. You can see when you first go into the testing lab, like I did in 2019, I was like, benefits this. I'm getting rigged up with an oxygen mask. I'm being told to run fast on a treadmill. And I get this report. And, I said to my coach, I was like, right, what do I do with this? And he says, just leave it to me. And over the years, you can actually see what is the main benefit. And the other advantage as well, you can actually work out from that what foods to put in your body to fuel you either for longer or shorter distance. And you can work out, so for example, how much carbohydrate you need. So I need 75 grams of carbohydrate an hour to fuel me for my long runs, which it sounds a lot, but in reality, it's not really a lot. It's kind of like a bag of something, a crisps and maybe an energy bar or something like that. So I know when I'm doing a long run, to keep me going for a length of time, I need to take 75 grams of carbohydrate, and I need to make sure when I'm packing my fuel and I'm at the checkpoints and I've got my crew with me, I say to them, 75 grams of carbohydrate, that's what we need. And so instead of, you know, we talk about strawberry laces and the nice treats, but they have to have a value or a nutritional value to keep the engine going. So I always say to myself, it's like a car. You know, if you drive at the optimum level to get the maximum miles to gallon out of it, that's what you do. But you keep having to put the fuel in it to keep it going. And the body essentially is that you're training to, instead of just training and going out for a run and having a great time, you're actually training to science. And the enjoyment is you can actually see your progression, which is fantastic.
Yeah, I didn't realise that you can tweak those markers to make progress in certain areas. When it comes to nutrition, because like, and you said this before, sort of it all works together. Is that the same for, you know, Olympians as well? So you're able to determine what they need to take on board before, during, after, well, for some, not during the race at all, but you can sort of see what they need to put into their bodies to work at their optimum.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, for anyone coming in for testing, we can get an idea of fuel contribution to certain intensities and also the energy expenditure during that time. So they can, like, fueling is really important for any exercise, especially when you're performing at the high levels or doing some really intense and long stuff. If you don't have the fuel or the energy to even perform that, let alone recover and adapt to that, you're not going to be able to sustain that sort of performance. So for any like high performing athlete we work with, knowing those numbers and then working with a nutritionist off the back of it to create a really like robust nutrition strategy is really important, so they know exactly how much they should be taking on, and they can trust that they're actually giving their body what it needs to fuel that performance. So that's a really important aspect for a lot of athletes that we worked with.
And it's so interesting just using the word fuel as well instead of food, because that's sort of, that is what you're doing, isn't it? Essentially, you're fueling your body so you can keep going.
Yeah, that's what I was going to say. I treat food as fuel.
Yeah,
so before a race in the week, I'm like, not another bowl of lentil pasta or not another bowl of this, but everything is just fuel going in. Mm. And then it's equally important. I've learned over the years, it's fuel putting in your body after. So it's recovering with the right fuel. Yeah, I have a few cheat meals and we all have the dirty food after it, but it's essential to get back to that fuel kind of food element straight after to get your body to recover to go again. A lot of people forget that, don't they, Lois?
Absolutely. Like, and any athlete, I think, has had a like point in time where they haven't quite fueled and then haven't quite recovered properly afterwards. So it's really important that actually getting enough energy in to fuel your performance, but then also energy for your body to recover and adapt to that training or race afterwards is really important. It's key for preventing injury, illness, and things like that, and making sure you're then ready to get back to training afterwards. If you start a training session and you're really underfueled, your muscles are kind of depleted of glycogen and you haven't got any glucose in your system, you're not going to be able to perform that training. You're not going to be able to do the race. And then your recovery afterwards is going to be impaired. You can't really make any progress. So especially for what Craig does, which is really long, if he doesn't have the fuel taken in regularly, his performance isn't sustainable. That gets to a point where he's going to deplete his muscle glycogen and he's going to fatigue and he's not going to be able to carry on performing. So it's really important.
You get things like, I think the terminology is right, it's called bonking, isn't it? Well, literally.
You carry on.
I'll carry on, it's fine.
It doesn't mean anything to me.
So, yeah, so literally, that's what is classed as bonking. So eventually you get your big high and then you just drop to the floor straight away. Because you and I experienced that a few years ago, first time, and I was like, somebody said to me, Craig, you're bonking, and I was like, what? Sorry.
I think any athlete or any endurance athlete would be able to relate to that. They definitely will know what bonking is.
What? Yeah. Hold on a second. So, is this like, for example, if I have 3 caramel eggs and I'm like, wow, and then I'm like, oh, that doesn't feel good. Mm. Is that?
Not quite. I imagine.
Do I need to run around the block?
Imagine you woke up and didn't have any breakfast and decided to go out on a really long walk eventually you're going to get to a point on that walk where you're like, oh, I can't go anymore, I need some energy. And if you sort of don't realise that you're about to hit that point and don't take on fuel at the right time, you're just not going to be able to walk anymore. So that's what you see in a lot of runners or any endurance athlete, is they might go out on some really long training runs, training rides, and not have enough fuel with them. And eventually it gets to a point where their performance is, you can't maintain it. They're going to have to take on some energy through carbohydrate, whether that's in a carb drink, eating a snack, anything. They're going to have to take that on before they can carry on, essentially.
So that
the key is not to get to that point, obviously.
Yeah. So getting to that point is where that terminology comes in. It's like, is it essentially like a massive crash?
Yeah, essentially. Bonking's like the colloquial term for it, but we would say sort of your glycogen depleted, or you just run out of energy. But yeah, the key is not to get to that point in your training. With the data that we give Craig, he's got quite an idea of how much carbohydrate and how much fuel his body actually needs. So he should be able to manage that and prevent it. But a lot of people don't know how much they should be taking on. I think a lot of people are surprised at the amount of carbohydrate your body needs when it's doing exercise. So
it is amazing what, you know, how the body kind of craves different things. You know, we talked about this on different podcasts. You know, you've got your go-to fuel to keep going, but when your body's kind of becoming depleted, that's when it's, correct me if I'm wrong, Lois, but that's when it starts craving different things. So it's like, oh, I could do with a McDonald's now. It's all the nice food that your body knows it needs to get in. I kind of call that as my light bulb moment, as my body's starting to become depleted and I need to get the right fuel in. So that's automatically when I flick the switch and go, right, my nutrition plan's this, but I know I'm depleted, so I've got to go to this because I need carbohydrate in, I need fuel in quick, so I don't have that crash. Because once I get to that crash point, I find it so hard to get back. It just takes so long to do. And then before you know it, your body's not being efficient anymore.
So I guess so many athletes do have that awareness and don't get to that point because they're aware of what the signs might be.
Yeah. So, for example, when you do your first half marathon, we'll ensure that you've got the right nutrition inside you before you start, and we'll make sure you've got the right nutrition for when to finish as well, which you will finish. You'll do it in a great time.
Awesome. So in terms of sort of, if people are listening and they're like, gosh, I didn't realise that, obviously Craig's a pro athlete, I'm not, so many of the people you work with are, but are you able, if you are sort of wanting to take a certain sport or exercise more seriously and you want to see some progress, are they literally able to come in and book in with you guys to monitor progress and kind of get that professional overview of how you can supplement your training or change your training regime to get to where you want to go? Can anyone do that?
Yeah, absolutely. So we get requests coming in, they say, I'm going to train for this race, or I want to do this with my training. They'll book in for a test and we'll say, okay, this is where your physiology's at. This is what your physiology might need to look like if you were to do well at this race or meet the PB that you want to get or meet the demands of what that event is. So if it's really mountainous, if it's really hot, is it really long? Are you going to be able to do that? And then what specifically would you benefit from in terms of your physiology to get to that point? So we can give ideas of sort of training that might work. We don't necessarily coach the athlete to get to that point, but we can give an idea of you should do more of this type of training or these types of sessions, and really like pinpoint the intensities and heart rates they should be working at together.
Gosh, that's brilliant.
So for example, I'll start training at Loughborough for a race in May. So I'll start training in the heat chamber and the altitude chamber to get me used to running at altitude and to get me used to running at heat. And we'll do the testing again in the heat and the altitude I'm going to be running at to see how my body acclimatizes to it. So it's literally, you can send an email in and say, right, I'm doing this race, I'm going to be climbing to 1,000 metres at 40 degrees, and they set the heat chamber, set it at the altitude, and just see how the body reacts to it. See if you pass out or you stop breathing or whatever. But it's fascinating because your body reacts in such a different way. I know when I did a five-day, multi-day race in Spain, I can't remember when it was now, 2019, I think it was 2018, I actually spent a lot of time in the heat chamber at altitude at Loughborough training for that race because it was going to be midsummer in the height of Spain and it was going to average 40, 45 degrees and I was going to be out for 14 hours. And the hydration strategy and the nutrition strategy worked perfectly to get me to the end of that race. It's fascinating.
Gosh,
it's just great.
It's so clever, isn't it? Like the body, I do... The more we talk to people on this podcast, the more I think the body is, it's incredible, isn't it? Mm-hmm. Like the way it's made and the way that you guys can delve into sort of the science behind it to for us to get the best out of our own bodies, because we're, like you say, we're all so different. So it's not, it has to be bespoke, doesn't it, to, mm-hmm. to individuals, what you want to achieve, what you're training, tweak the training, etc. That is unreal.
It is great. And point from me, which a lot of people ask me, they say, but can your physiology... I think that's the right word, your physiological state of your body, will it only go so far? This is the question, yeah. isn't it? Because I get asked that. They say, Craig, but you're pushing your body to that limit. How far can it go? Mm. And I always say, just your state of your body, your skeleton, how it's built, will only go so far, I presume. Or will it? That's.
I mean, in terms of like training and like training the human body, particularly for endurance sports, like there are genetic limits to how far you can go. Something like VO2 max that I mentioned earlier, like there is a genetic component to that. So some of our really elite like Olympians, they might be maxing out on their sort of genetic capacity for improving that. But then there's other factors that come into play. So as we age, certain areas of our physiology start to decline. So then it becomes a question of like, can we just be more efficient at using what we've got? So VO2 max in particular will start to decline after the age of 25. We can push it back on with training, but it gets to a point where we're sort of looking at maintaining that and sort of utilizing it more efficiently. I'd say we've looked at your data, like we know sort of where you're at. There's definitely still scope for improvement within your physiology at the moment. Sure. So like, it's really hard to say, like probably there is a limit to how far you can go, but I guess we just have to find out where that is.
Yeah, absolutely. And the reason why I ask this question is because I think in my mind, I'll train 110%, you know, Neil, my coach, and my strength conditioning coach, they'll say, Craig, we need to ratchet this back, you know, or you've pushed that session too hard, because I'm always thinking how can I improve more and more? And what I'm trying to find is that, it will my body not go any further? The great thing for me is what I've seen over the years is through age, I've actually improved. So as I've got older, my body's actually improved, which in theory, you shouldn't improve, but it just shows the training I'm doing is actually making a difference. And that's what's driving me on.
But I mean, I can see how that would be though, because I suppose where I'm at right now, like, I feel like, and we've had this, we've sort of had this discussion before, like I want to lose weight because I think that I'm heavier now than I was before I had two kids, for example. And I feel like if I was in better shape by losing weight, I will perform better because I won't be as heavy. Mm-hmm. So I feel like even though obviously we're all getting older, I believe that getting older is a privilege, but we're all getting older. But if you tweak things, diet, exercise, then you can improve, can't you?
Yeah, definitely. Like the human body is amazing. Like it will adapt to a stimulus that you give it. So like if you sit at your desk all day and you eat lots of biscuits, you're going to adapt to that. You're going to put on like a bit of fat. You're going to sort of blood sugar's going to get a little bit less responsive to insulin, stuff like that. So it's going to adapt to that. Equally, if you start adding in 20 minute walks to your day, a run every week, a gym session, it's going to start adapt to that. So wherever you are along those stages, if you're going to add a new stimulus to your body, you're going to be able to adapt to it. There's like when it gets to the point where we're like Craig, where you're doing crazy volumes and long stuff, it becomes there's so much more complicated and there's so much more going into it, and your recovery and everything around it and the data is really important. But for the general person, like just doing something is usually enough to actually stimulate some sort of progress in terms of your improving your fitness or losing weight or whatever that might be for them.
And that is so lovely to hear, actually, because whilst Craig likes to push himself and you've obviously got these massive goals, like you say, just sort of in general, talking about the high percentage of people. Like for me, I feel like sometimes I feel tired. It's been a long day, but I think I'll go for a swim. It's good for me mentally and I'm moving, and that's better than not doing something like that. So whilst I'm not running up a hill or doing like super heavy weight session, the fact that I'm moving, I still think that's still a win.
Yeah, definitely it is. I think being consistent with something is better than doing nothing at all. So if you enjoy walking, if you enjoy swimming, if you enjoy like gymming, dancing, doing that consistently is going to give your body sort of enough to essentially make some improvements. Other aspects of your lifestyle and diet is going to come into that. But if what you enjoy is running and running up mountains, then doing that is going to sort of help. But if it's something else, just doing that is better than just sitting down.
Yeah.
I mean, it's great. I mean, we take it to extremes, obviously, with myself. But if anybody's just starting out, any type of movement stimulates the body. But what a lot of people don't kind of realise, I was talking to somebody the other day about this, exercise has a massive effect on your mindset. So if you're tired at night, I was talking to a friend of mine, I said, look, why am I so tired? I said, well, you sat at the desk, you come home, you get in your car. I said, just go for a walk around the block. Before, you know, an hour before bed, go for a walk around the block, you'll sleep so much better. And then in the morning when you get up before your breakfast, go for a quick walk around the block. I said, you'll feel great. And he was like, well, I said, just try it. I said, because it's amazing. And I said, if you want to get rid of your day before bed so you sleep better, walk around the block with a pen and paper and just write everything down. I said, it's, you know, and he was like, really? He said, well, you don't train late at night. I don't train late. He said, well, why don't you train late at night? I said, well, if I train late at night, I'm going to be wide awake because the training I'm going to be doing is going to be completely different to walking around the block. He's like, all right, okay. And we were talking through this and they were like, oh, right, so we don't have to be, you know, runners or cyclists or something. I said, just start moving. Yeah, if you start moving, your mindset, you know, changes, you'll sleep better. And then what'll happen is your whole nutritional thing, because your body won't start craving things because they're tired.
Because you're not tired.
Because you're not tired. I mean, I don't kind of understand the physiology state, which is why Lois is here. But as I understand it in my kind of world is if your body's tired, it craves the nice things, the nice foods, the biscuits. Because as you just said, Lois, is that if you're sat there having a packet of biscuits all day, when you're sat at home, it's going to think, well, I've just had a packet of biscuits all day. At night, it'll say, well, can I have some more biscuits, please? And the automatic response is we give it some more biscuits instead of just going for a walk around the block. You know, it is interesting. It's like me. We just talked a minute ago off air. I know I need to lose some weight to help me improve my VO2 max. Not a lot of weight, but I feel heavy. That's my psychological state. I'm not heavy, but that's how I feel.
I mean, we're all different, aren't we? Yeah. So if you feel that, you feel that. So
yeah. But. You know, and it's interesting how the mindset can play a big part of that. You know, I mean, going back to, you know, with my test in January, there's some things I thought, you know what, I was really impressed with myself that I could push myself as hard as I could on the treadmill, as Lois said, she gave me a time, and I'm like, well, I'm going to go beyond that time, you know. She said it was 10 minutes and I couldn't even do it. I'd still carry on crutch, but that's that, you know. But when you get the report, you say, oh, and I was disappointed that I saw my VO2 max, as we just talked about, take a slight dip. But in reality, it doesn't mean anything, but that's just to me, it does. So I'm straight away onto Neil. I'm like, this is my running coach. I'm like, Neil, my VO2 max has dipped. She said, don't worry, we're coming to back into season. We've got a plan for it, so on and so forth. And I'm, you know, as we talked about before, I'm struggling with my nutrition at the moment. I've got to look at the gluten intake. I've got a nut allergy. So I'm having to adapt my nutritional needs to my training as well, which also plays a big part in that, because I'm trying to learn how to go further on a different kind of fueling strategy as well, which is also equally hard, because it's easy to just keep eating chocolate biscuits, because I know they'll keep me going. I'm not giving up strawberry laces, though.
That's it, though, isn't it? I think some of us find comfort in routine. I definitely do. And for me, just making small changes, I've realised it's probably the best way, instead of trying to change everything at once, and because it's less easy to maintain that way.
So
a bit of movement, tweaking my nutrition, and getting back to where I want to be and not being super hard on myself is probably what I would say to a friend.
Yeah,
I think whatever you say to a mate, the advice you give to a mate, you should probably talk to yourself in that kind of way as well. I don't think we do it enough.
This is it. I'm looking forward. I know we said at the start of this conversation, I know me and Lois and yourself had a conversation, it's going to be great just to get you in the lab and see where your results are. I think it'd be fantastic.
I mean,
I think it's a great starting point.
I do find it fascinating. I do believe in science. I'm a bachelor of, are you a bachelor of science?
Yeah.
Same. So, like, I appreciate that. I appreciate it. But I think let me lose half a stone first before you get me in the studio, so I feel more confident.
Okay.
What I will say is that if you were to come in for testing, what Greg was talking about with the data that you get, is really personalised, and we tailor it towards your goals. So people who get the most value out of the reports and out of the testing are the people who actually have a goal that they want to work towards. So for anyone just starting out with exercise, just doing something is enough to sort of make progress. But if they're getting to the point where they're like, actually, I want to train for this half marathon, 5K, even if they're just doing park runs, like, or they want to take on a big challenge, like, when they've got a really specific goal, that's when testing can be really useful. But if you just want to sort of get active and do anything, then just doing that is enough, I'd say, to start with. There's obviously a place for benchmarking before and after. It'd be a really nice case study to see how you move from like one side of training to the other. But
I think it'd be a great case study. I genuinely do.
To be fair, like thinking about it, it's a good motivator as well, isn't it? To sort of work towards seeing some progress, which is something that I've only sort of measured that on a personal level without all the stats and stuff like that. But I just think it's so fascinating. I'm really grateful that you came in because it's just brilliant, isn't it?
Yeah.
It's so insightful. And I think the way you explained it as well makes me understand. And quite frankly, that's a task.
I could talk for hours to Lois about testing and the science behind it. Say the reports and the information you get, just, well, it does, it makes me want to train more. Because I just think, when's my next testing? When's my next report, you know?
That's the aim.
You're coming back. You're welcome.
I get excited. It's like, you know, take your car for MOT. I just get excited. I'm going in for my annual MOT and then the results come out.
So you've done these recent tests. Are you likely to go back anytime soon? Like when, or are you going to go back into the chamber for sort of warm weather training? What's next for you when it comes to working with Loughborough?
The next stage for me is I'm booked in for testing in the altitude and heat chamber. And then from there, we'll decide what sessions I'm going to need ready for my race in May.
Okay.
And then we'll see how that progresses. And then because I'm racing in Africa in October, November, up more mountains, I'll probably go back in 6 months' time to see how my progression's going, because I'm going to have to change my training for that race in Africa and see how my VO2 max has improved, because I'm going to need a different fueling strategy. Even though the races are a lot shorter, the climbing's a lot more. So it'll just be interesting to see where we're at. So, yeah.
So you'll be back?
I'll be back.
Looking forward to it.
I'll be back. That was great, wasn't it? Really insightful. Got some great information from Lois.
Big question. How far have you run this week?
Just done 60 miles this week.
Just dropped the old 60.
Just dropped the old 60.
60, Craig.
Yeah. So nice recovery week next week. For you, I think you need to get back on the treadmill and do 30 minutes jogging. You've done some walking, done some swimming.
Yeah.
So
I have to agree. I feel like work is less hectic at the moment. I feel like I'm getting myself more organised with my nutrition and just my general routine. So I'm happy to take on a challenge.
30 minutes, 5% incline, walking up a hill on a treadmill.
Okay.
Put some nice music on. Have a chat. Chat to the next day on the treadmill.
I tell you something. I've got a mate called Tom, and he puts together these amazing playlists on Spotify. It's Tom Watts, his surname, W-A-T-T-S. And it's like some really, it's like loads of new music, undiscovered music and talent, like house music and stuff like that. And that has been getting me through. So if you're open to getting in some new music, I suggest having a little listen.
Tom Watts.
Tom's playlist. Yeah, they're really good.
Right, I'll check out Tom Watts. That's great. Well, thank you for listening. That's the end.
That was Running Life and Stuff. Right now, Craig's into the next adventure, and he'll be back here for the next episode in 2 weeks. If you enjoyed the conversation, please use your app to follow or subscribe to this show so you don't miss the next one.